This conference is being recorded.
Before we go on there, report. If you have direct questions for me and the board, we'll answer it after I say what I'm going to say. God knows what that's going to be. The fire chief, same thing. After the fire chief's report, you can direct questions to the fire chief. After the fire chief's report, there will be a time for open comments, public comments, any opinion that you have you want to express. Feel free to come up and address us. After the public comments, I will make a presentation of the restated articles that we are asking you to approve today. After that, there will be a public comment section again for those who want to address the issue, both for and against,
and more.
Then we have the presentation of the candidate here. Okay? So we have, that's kind of the outline. Now, there are some fire maps up here. We've had a couple of fires recently, one at the Hoot Owl, which is up by the potato patch, And there was one at the Green Gate up on the Big Bug Road, just a mile or so from Big Bug, if you weren't aware of it. There's some maps up here where those fires were, so you can see in relationship to where your property is. Also, if Judy Ware is here yet. Okay, Joyce Loffers down there has made a map. It's an interactive map that works on an iPad. She has that map on her iPad. Judy does. It's in draft form now, and you can move the map around on an iPad and see the properties in Walker. So that'll be available out here, you know, after the meeting for sure. So we start the meeting with the Pledge of Allegiance. One of the things. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which we stand, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. So calm I am, you know, one nation.
Yes.
Okay, Roger's report is what you want to hear. These annual meetings and some kind of drone on. We have a board member that is particularly sensitive to the fact that they drone on. Let me introduce the board. Your vice president is Chuck Bowers. Well, you don't have to clap for that. Your secretary is Russ Courtney. A lot of work. Treasurer is Vic Nicken. John Olenessian up for re-election. Greg Saab is a quitter. Scott Stratman has had other commitments for the weekend. Roger, of course, is your fire chief, says he's the next official member of the board. And that's who you want to hear from because he has a lot to talk about in terms of what's going on. The board has been working well. Actually, we have things have settled down with the healing continues. For those of you that have been around for a while, you know that for the past several years, there has been some angst between members. Actually, friends have broken up friendships because of this. It's unfortunate. This is a quiet place where people come. They don't come here to fight. And we want to keep this on an even keel as possible. If you have a different opinion, that's fine. Nobody's going to agree on every topic. But at the same time, you can be civil about how you disagree with someone. We had a survey that we presented to the community to ask what you thought we were doing. We were encouraged by the results. There was 100, I think, or so people that responded to that. Medical coverage and firefighting are the issues that were most important. Everybody seems to like the fact that pancakes and the social events can go. So all those things are going to continue. But we do have a planning committee that we're going to try to reach into the future and see where this department is going to be going. Right? We're going to talk about the evolution of firefighting and how things are happening and how we are changing to meet the expectations of the firefighting community. The firefighting community around us has been a great help to us, and I'm sure Roger will talk about that. Funding continues to be a big issue. I think Vic is going to address that in his treasurer's report. We remain at about 33% of the property owners that continue to contribute to the fire department. We bring in enough money to operate. We were a little below budget this year. But if you look at the equipment that we have, you have supported us in a great way over the years. We need that continued support. We're a volunteer organization. We need your voluntary contributions, and we need your voluntary hourly help, your volunteer efforts. Is Dan here, Dan Howe? Come on up here, Dan, for a minute. The trouble with recognizing volunteers is you never get them all, but during the year, I've given Dan a certificate of appreciation. He wasn't here, and I haven't seen him since. So, Dan, why don't you come on up here and give this certificate of appreciation for your volunteer work. Well deserved, certainly, as a result of Green Gate Fire, he was up here, as were all the firefighters that were on that fire, extending themselves well beyond what you would expect that they would have to do. I really don't have a whole lot more to say this morning. If you have any questions for me, or for the board, now is the time to ask them. So if you have something that you would like to ask. We have a microphone up here. James, you want to run it back if somebody wants to raise their hand?
Bessie's
in the back. Well, I think there may be some better that don't want to hear. Sir, he's coming with a mic. I think those are questions for the fire chief, and I'm sure that's your interest, is of course inspired. This is more the political side of the meeting. And okay, anybody else have any questions for me or the board? All right. The next thing on the agenda is the secretary's report from the 2012 annual meeting.
Because May's not over yet, but we're trying to come as close as we can to what should be the year-end numbers. And they will change a little bit, but not that much. Here's the big number, guys. Last fiscal year, in contributions of all kinds, this has nothing to do with fundraising, pancakes, and all that kind of stuff. This is contributions where somebody writes a check. This is last fiscal year, not our current fiscal year, was $88,653. This fiscal year, $71,302. So we're off. Those can do quick math. That's almost $20,000 less. But hold till I get done, okay? I really can't preach to the choir that's sitting here because, frankly, the people that come are the people who give. But we as a board recognize that we need to go a step further with our fundraising efforts because we cannot continue to operate this department with the manpower, the equipment, the vehicles at our current rate of funding. The good news is that Roger runs a very tight ship. Money was saved in expenses, including the fact that the consultant we had last year from the Mirror Fire Department, we terminated that early last year, which saved us quite a few thousands of dollars. So overall, we're projecting a net loss for the year of about $3,500. But trust me, guys, this is pure luck that we had lucky things on the expense side. I can tell you right now, our expenses are going up, and Roger's going to address in his talk what it's like to run a fire department in 2013 versus what it used to be. It's expensive, and we got to do something about it. We have $115,000 in cash sitting in the bank, and just one footnote on that loss of $3,500, that does not include vehicle depreciation. This is always a big discussion, depreciation. It's a non-cash item, but it's not non-cash when you have to buy the new fire truck. But last year, we wrote down on our P&L just under $30,000 for depreciation. So if you had in depreciation, we really lost $33,000 for the year. That's a strange report. Quite frankly, I'm not going to go into minutia, but can I ask questions?
I can.
Can I answer them? Okay. Now we're sure. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I just have one question. When you talk about that being the total contribution, does that include the money that went for the
negative? It does not include that.
Okay, so that's
I was very careful to take that out of contributions because the Big Buck Fire Station was what I call a zero deal. You know, for every dollar spent, there was a dollar raised specifically for that. Now, I was really careful to keep, you know, I want to trend these contributions. And frankly, we're putting all donations into one pot called contributions because we get checks throughout the year. You can call them what you want, but at the end of the day, it's a contribution. Unless it's a specific, you know, thing like a new fire truck or something like that where we need to maintain a separate account. Does anybody have a check for negative $33,000 they want to bring me?
For a piece of it?
Yeah, we do accept Visa, PayPal. Now, but trust me, we will be operating. We have to address this. And Greg and I talked about this at great length because he's going to be doing the planning going forward, but a lot of the planning is the funding part. You know, the district is a horrible word to some people, not to others. But what's even worse is when we run out of money for running the department. So thank you.
Okay, it was a busy year, so I tried to make this outline comprehensive, but there is time that's budgeted for asking questions for what I'm sure I'm going to miss. First up, recap of incidents. We had four wildfires. Interestingly, two of them were during the winter. We had three structure fires after having, I think, two structure fires in about 10 years. We had three in 34 days, which was a great way to put the training. Last year, we had a bunch of training. Got up here and talked about all the training we had for structure. We had a chance to put that into action with, relatively speaking, a positive outcome. Other calls, we had a search and rescue, we had a search and recovery, and then, just like about every other fire department, most of our calls were medical. We had about 30 medical calls. So, you know, think about that. A handful of fires and 30 medical calls. It's very typical of most departments. Next item, important trainings. So part of the equation, you know, these guys have kind of laid the groundwork for me here, so I'm bound to disappoint, but the nature of how we provide service and how we access training is an evolving thing. It's a constantly evolving thing. If we can find some of this training for free, great, we can have it for free, but we can't necessarily always find it for free. And if we can't, well, we still have to have it. So that's part of the equation. And it's not like going forward, the fire service is going to impose less training on us, if you take my meaning. So there's going to continue to be more and more training. I've only been here for 10 years, and it's really completely different than how it was when I first started. And 10 years from now, it's going to be completely different and meaningfully more expensive, and that's important for everyone to understand. This past year, what we knocked out as far as important trainings, hazmat awareness. This is a huge safety thing. It's not like we're going to put on the suits and go solve the problem, but we are now better trained to recognize when something might be a hazmat. And if you think about, you know, all the stuff we all have in our garages and that sort of thing, there's potential for hazmat all over the place, and people get very sick from this sort of thing. And so the training hopefully allows us to more quickly recognize that we're in trouble, back off, and call people who do have the right training to actually fix the problem. NIMS 100, 200, 700, and 800. So a few years ago, we were talking about this, about NIMS compliance and ICS training and all this sort of thing, and it seemed like a big mystery of how we access it. Well, so it turns out, you just type in NIMS 100 into Google, and it's the first thing that pops up. And so we all got these four online classes squared away. Next up, there's two more of these classes. They're very important, but they have to be classroom-oriented. We might be able to get it for free, but we might not. If not, you know, we've got to have it. We've got to have someone come here and put the training on for us. So that's going to be a meaningful expense. Other important trainings we've had, we've had some good luck with kind of building stronger ties to some of the local departments in the area. Prescott came out a couple of times. Groom Creek was here once. And it seems as though these departments are willing to help us, not just with incidents, but also with our trainings. You know, that's a big deal. They're professional departments. We're volunteers. You know, it's hugely beneficial for us. Next up, medicals. Medical stuff. So there's a few things to talk about here. The first up, kind of the most important development of the year, and I think this is a byproduct of the survey. Medical is a high priority, as it should be. Steve Nathanson and I had the luck of running into, we took a class called Medical Leader Unit, or Medical Unit Leader, and it was, one of the instructors was a gentleman named Howard Kravitz. Dr. Kravitz is a retired pulmonologist, sits on the board of a foundation. Stephen must have made a hell of an impression on Dr. Kravitz, because when I met him, he asked me, so are you with Walker? Yeah. Well, what do you guys need? One thing led to another, and boom, we've got two brand new AEDs. So we had two, now we've got four. That's crucial in terms of response. You know, an AED isn't going to work 45 minutes later, I'm sorry to say. But now that we've got them on so many trucks, we've got them on, actually on four vehicles, you know, that allows for a better response. It may make the difference. Hopefully it never comes to that, but if it does, I mean, that's huge for us. AEDs are, you know, very expensive pieces of equipment, and to the extent we're trying to provide a better service or a more enhanced medical service, that's $2,000 per device. You know, and the community, I'm sure, wants more coverage and more than just two new AEDs, so that's something to think about in terms of, you know, the cost and trying to ask you all for money or more likely for you to peer pressure your neighbors who aren't donating to give more money. That's probably more accurate given the group that's here. The other big development, and this is kind of an experiment and we'll see how it goes, but so far so good, we're having paramedic coverage. So I think most people know during the fire season on the weekends we have something called Severity Patrol, which is kind of manning the station combined with driving out in the community. It allows for a faster response to whatever might come along. So this year, and it's two firefighters that go out. This year, for lack of a better word, we're essentially renting a paramedic for one of the two spots in the truck to go out. So again, God forbid someone needs it, we've got a paramedic here during the fire season on the weekends. And it's a starting point. We, you know, we'd like to get to the point where we do have more paramedic coverage, but this is a starting point. And I think it's a hugely positive development. Next item for medical. A couple years ago, we had a whole bunch of people take the EMT class. It took us to five. Mark Keegan is about to pass his test. There's Mark right there. So that'll bring us to six EMTs. You know, I'm not 100% certain, but probably the most we've ever had. So again, it's a faster response. It's a better response. Mark's here all the time, it seems. And, you know, again, it's a, you all want more medical coverage. It's totally logical, but it's a slow process. It's not something that happens overnight. And this is how it happens slowly. We're, you know, we're doing it slowly, and hopefully we continue to make progress. Next up, Big Bug Station. So that's completed. It's now housing Patrol 81. It's got one of the AEDs on it. And we've got a couple of firefighters who live pretty close, so if there's something out that way, they can zip up there pretty fast on their ATV or their personal vehicles, access that truck instead of having to double back to the station. So big shout out to Mark Heron and everyone else up there, Fred and Carolyn, everyone else who brought that together. You know, that's a big step forward for us in terms of faster response. Let's see. Further integration with neighboring departments. So I think I mentioned this last year, the fire community here is a national model for interagency cooperation, which is kind of a neat thing. And we're not in the middle of it, but we have a seat at the table of all of these different things that go on, which is, you know, great progress for us in terms of, you know, one, departments, remember, other departments and agencies remembering that we're here, understanding what we have, what our capabilities are, what our training is, and, you know, them wanting to come help us. When we have a, you know, for us a large incident, you know, we want and need help, and, you know, it's to the, they've always come, it's their job, but now they want to come and they want to help us, and I think that's, again, another positive development for the department. Let's see. Another thing that I think we'll be talking about later, but this is important, every March we have something called the Basin Ops Drill, usually involves some sort of simulated incident somewhere close by, maybe Groom Creek or whatever. This year it was held in Walker. And, you know, this is something I kind of pushed for, and we were lucky enough to have it happen. I probably put this in the email when we were talking about this, but the benefit is if we ever have something like a gladiator fire here, all of the people that would be likely to come were at this drill in March. So they've been all, not all through here, but they've been through here. They have some idea of what's going on, and it won't be, you know, we have something, the first time they come here won't be in the middle of a raging fire. They'll have already been here. And so I think that will make it easier to mount an effective and safe response, again, should ever have something ever happen here. Future needs and funding. So it's kind of a theme we've got going here, isn't it? But a couple of things here. One thing that I've learned recently is, and this, that we just started a Western Yavapai County Chiefs Association, and it's all of the neighboring departments, it's like 20-something departments are involved with this thing. We are, in terms of personnel, in terms of size of the building, in terms of apparatus, we are far from the smallest department. We're actually probably right in the middle, even larger than quite a few fire districts. So that speaks volumes about past generosity of the community, but it also speaks volumes about the need for that to hopefully continue and hopefully grow. We've got two water tenders here. They're both like more than 20. Chief Sumner, how old are the water tenders? Do you remember? Yeah, if not older. They work great, but they need a lot of, well, you know, TLC. Vic said something about my running a tight ship. Well, it would have been tighter if we had not had to spend $5,000 on the transmission for water tender 82 last year. This stuff just happens. These are old trucks. They get the job done. Tender 82 crawled up a road that for this Green Gate fire that was terrible, and it worked fantastically well, but it's 20 years old. Stuff is going to break. Now, we can continue to, you know, make these sort of $3,000, $5,000 fixes as they come up, but at some point, I'm afraid we're going to get a $15,000 fix-it bill. If that ever happens, you know, at some point, there's a good money after bad situation, and that might be it. So that's something to think about in terms of future needs. We've got an old fleet, works well, but old eventually dies. And we're not there yet, but that's, you know, at some point we're going to be asking for a water tender. You know, you can plan on that coming. The other thing, a little less dramatic, Joyce Lothridge, I don't know where she is, has done, I can't begin to describe the scope of the task she's taken on in terms of developing our mapping capability. Right now what we have in the water tenders is a book that's only about this thick. With what Joyce has been able to do, if she were to print it, it would be like a phone book. Well, you know, scrambling through a 180-page document while driving to a fire, that's not going to happen. However, this thing can be put on something like, you know, a tablet, a Kindle, or one of these Android tablets or something like that. So here I'm begging you all for when you get your new tablet, Kindle, iPad, whatever, and you've got this old one and you're wondering what to do with it, Walker Fire can use it. We can load the PDF onto a tablet, have it on the truck, and it can allow us. The thing is not so much us getting there, although sometimes it is, but the other part of the equation is, you know, the people that are coming to help us, them getting there. You know, this fire we had the other night, Tim McFarland answered the call. The radio went off at midnight 13. Tim McFarland, I'm coming, and he drove up there, scouted out the fire. It was easy for the Walker personnel to find it, but it was just me and Tim for like 45 minutes. You know, that's not going to get it done on a fire. We need help from the other agencies, and we want to do everything we can to make it easier. So, you know, to the extent we've got this PDF, we can, email it to them on the site, and they can access it. So if you've got an old tablet, please send it along. Other types of stuff that are going to wear out, and this is just how it is, things like oxygen bottles for SCBAs, the turnout gear for structure fires, fire shelters, the things we use on wildland fires, those have a finite life. Radios, it's kind of a running joke about, how many radios there are in the middle of the black on a wildfire. This sort of thing kind of is repetitive, and we need to be able to, restock as needed. Next up, can I have all the firefighters stand up, please? Hopefully everyone understands what Stephen does for the department. This paramedic thing, there are more moving parts to it than I can begin to fathom, and he's pulled this thing together, and that's just one little thing. He's done so much that, 6 months from now, we might forget about how much work this one thing does. So, he is our medical team, and we owe him a huge thanks. Mark Keegan drove up from Phoenix in the middle of the night for this Greengate fire. Middle of the night, Joelle and my wife called everyone at 12:30, 1 o'clock, whatever time it was, drives up from Phoenix, fights the fire, goes back, gives some sort of presentation at work on Thursday, back here Friday scrubbing hoses. That's dedication. Tim McFarland comes to every call after the Greengate fire. We needed to mop up on Thursday. He shows up at 8 in the morning. Okay, let's go. Then we had a medical call. We're done with the mop-up. We have a medical call come in at like 3:30 or 4 o'clock that same day. Tim's there helping out, getting the lifeline in. Todd Primus drove up from Phoenix for the Greengate fire. Helps us with billing. He's our finance guy. Huge help. James Lee. No one in Walker loves this department more than James Lee. No one. Terry Morrison drives up from Phoenix. Probably one of the least fun jobs is driving the water tender during a fire. I don't think he even saw the fire. But you put a fire out with water, and hello, he's going to Costco to get us water. Chief Sumner back there, he was, I think, the third one who responded on the radio. I think he put in a 12-and-a-half-hour shift shuttling water up a road that, if you ever see what this road looks like, you're not going to want to drive it in your ATV, it's so bad. And he drove it up in an enormous water truck. Larry Messerly just notched his 10-year anniversary with the department. You don't do something for 10 years because you hate it. That's huge dedication, and there he is again, comes to everything. Mariah Jones, fairly new to the department, just got her associates in fire science. She's imminently hireable, yet here she is back there helping us still. Unbelievable. Jody Stark, volunteered for years, kept coming as a matter of circumstance, had trouble getting out to a fire because she lives in Phoenix, finally got her first fire, never lost patience. That's dedication. Pat Newell lives right across the street. Okay, let's go. That's pretty much what Pat says whenever there's an incident. That's what we need. That's crucial. Mike Smith, if anyone loves the fire department more than James Lee, it's Mike Smith. This guy loves every aspect of fire. Kathy Sumner comes to everything. She's been kind of a cornerstone of the department for, 7 or 8 years, something like that, for a long time. There's Tina back there. I can see her. Tina Rodriguez brings her Smoky Pine crew in. So the thing with that is, Okay. Everyone in the middle of the room, what do you notice? We're not that young. She brings like 50 dudes who are 25 who can scratch up a fire line that's on a hill like this. How important do you think that is? It's crucial to trying to put out a fire. I don't know where he is, but Jay Sumner was here somewhere. Jay has more experience in terms of fighting fire than probably most of us put together, if not all of us put together. How crucial is that any time we need to fight a fire? So, you know, everyone plays a role here, and this is only like half the group. Everyone plays a role here, but the community owes a huge thanks to what, you know, they're willing to do, get up in the middle of the night, go help someone on a medical call, whatever. So, you know, my thanks to you guys. That's awesome what you do. Thank you. Be anticlimactic, just a couple of more things. I want to mention FireWise. Lauren Beikert does all the heavy lifting for this thing. I'm on the committee, but you know, I'm just there to occasionally say yes to something. Lauren does all the. This is not right. Lauren does all the heavy lifting. This is huge in terms of trying to prevent. You know, fires are going to happen, but if there's not, you know, acres and acres of dead and down, then they're probably less likely to spread and blow up into something hideous. So big thanks to Lauren. He's got a table set up. This is something, if you haven't already done, you need to learn about what this is. He's getting, I don't know how he does it because it's difficult to do. He's getting grants coming into us to help you, you know, absorb the cost of getting stuff removed from your property. So please go see Lauren at the FireWise table. Somewhere floating around, maybe it's over here, we've got... You've probably gotten about 50 emails about this water use agreement. If you haven't already filled out an agreement, please do. We're trying to move this along so we can access water in case of a large incident. And a couple of community announcements. First one you can talk to Stephen about, Lifeline and Native Air Insurance. For it's like one is, I think they're both about $50. When you go to the hospital on Lifeline, it's like $2,000 or something like that. Your insurance either covers it or it doesn't, or you have a deductible or you don't, or a copay. You should talk to Stephen, find out whether it makes economic sense for the $50 to not have to pay anything if you have to go to the ambulance. Native Air, similar type of thing. It's $50. That's tens of thousands of dollars to take a helicopter ride. For $50, whatever it is you'd have to pay after your insurance, you don't have to pay it. So do I have that right? Yeah, $50 versus thousands of dollars. At the very least, it's worth spending the time to get educated on. And last community announcement, if you've got expired prescriptions at home, law enforcement stations will take that in. Steve sent me a flyer, and what I've got here is YCSO, Prescott PD, Prescott Valley PD, and Chino Valley PD. So if you've got expired meds and you don't know what to do with them, you can take them to the police. I probably went way past my allocated time, but if we've got time for questions, I can take any.
I didn't give you any time.
You didn't?
Okay.
Oh, no, there's a couple.
Good job.
Actually, I saw Mike Burns first.
Yeah, actually two questions for Roger. First of all, you mentioned that we do rent a paramedic.
Yes.
What does that cost? So everybody has an idea when they do their dues or hit up their friends. Part of our expenses.
So to be clear, we're experimenting with it this year. Next year, if we do this, I imagine it'll look different. When we pay for severity, the firefighter, we pay them $12.50 an hour. The paramedic, this summer, we're paying $19 an hour. So an extra $6.50.
Another question. We've had good response from all the other agencies around here, fire. At one time, I remember back about 4 or 5 years ago, there was a large discussion about whether we would at some point need to have agreements in place with these groups. I don't know if we've ever done that. If we didn't, so far it seems to be working fine without, but will we need this at some point?
Okay, so part of the equation here is we're effectively surrounded by forest land. So signing some, because we're not, as I understand it, because we're not contiguous, automatic aid is difficult. Another part of the equation is that we're not a fire district. makes automatic aid unlikely. Correct. Sir.
What's your assessment of the condition of the forest, say, compared to this time last year?
Okay, so my assessment wouldn't mean a damn thing to you. What the Forest Service puts out on a regular basis is, oh, it looks great. No, what they put out on a regular basis is an assessment. You can get some pretty specific detail. And the bottom line is, right now, things are in the range of normal for this area, which sounds great, except they were in the range of normal when the Gladiator fire started. You know, our normal is very dry. It's very dry right now. They put in burn restrictions starting, I think it was May 22nd, but whatever, this past week, stage one burn restrictions. If you didn't get an email on it, you should have. We can try and address that. So, and this is a normal thing. Sometime in May, every year, early May, mid-May, whatever, this starts up. But things are normal, but again, our normal is dry, so, you know, please be careful. Okay. Thank you.
Excuse me,
You know, I'm not sure it's actually, I think we create a legal problem if we get into any kind of real detail, unfortunately. It was human caused, and the homeowner wasn't home. So, there you go.
Roger, when I said.
Thanks, Roger.
Now, when I said I didn't have time on the agenda, I didn't schedule you for any amount of time. You can talk as long as you want. If you want to come back, you're still welcome. Because you're the person that they want to hear from.
That's true.
See, Jack Smith has wandered in. You can talk later if you want, Jack, but Jack, your board supervisor representative for this area. So, all right, public comments. Anybody have anything they want to address us with? What's wrong with you? Oh, okay. Hang on. He's bringing you a microphone. Identify yourself so we know for the record who you are.
So I want to be in the right spot. So the community or
this is just address the annual meeting with concerns that you have about what's going on with the Walker Fire Protection Association. There'll be community announcements later for your, if you want to make some announcements about stuff. This is just for many, many years, there's people who have some opinions about the different things that are going on. Anybody? Wow.
Oh, whoa, the difference in 2 years and worse.
Because
I'm looking at the number of people in attendance, and it
seems quite low compared to the previous meeting. How many
people voted by proxy? How many proxies did you get, Russ?
Roughly
10
or 11.
Is that? Okay. All right. Now, Chuck Bauer has something to say. Okay.
Real quickly, Roger touched on the FireWise, and if anybody hasn't signed up on there, there's lists going around where you could sign into FireWise and get some information and get on the list. We have some prizes we're going to be drawing around the voting time, and I think you got to be here to win those, and there's some nice ones. So I would encourage, if you haven't signed up for the FireWise thing, I'd encourage that. Also, after that rousing speech by Roger, I'm donating an extra donation for the fire department because I think everybody needs to do that. I don't want to be on a stump here, but, you know, these guys that live in the charcoal kiln area, they found that firing on their doorstep isn't fun. I live up on Mary May, fire on my doorstep in December wasn't fun. And we have the most dedicated group of guys. And I wrote an email to the board, and you know, it's the gratitude is hard to put into words for what our firefighters do. I know John Sumner is probably older than me, and driving up that hill in a water tender all damn night is probably not one of the things that he wanted to do. And And same with Tim. I mean, we do have aging firefighters here. Excuse me, I get a little choked up on it. But we, for one thing, the firewise thing we're going to talk about a little bit. There was one other thing I had here. We'll get to it. I think I can't remember what it was, but I thought because I'm getting older.
Aging.
I think that does have something to do with the age. All right. On the agenda that we distributed is the completely amended and restated articles of incorporation. Over the past few years, there have been, we redid the articles two or three years ago. It was in the midst of turmoil, and there were things that got into the articles of incorporation that probably were best not put in there, but they were. It's not necessarily fatal. But this year, the board, and last year, we dealt with the bylaws to kind of bring the bylaws into some semblance of order. We will readdress the bylaws again next year. This particular issue is the Articles of Incorporation. And what we did was ask Bill Whittington, who is our corporate counsel, to give us a simple, clear, clean set of bylaws that doesn't have that doesn't have any of the weight that comes from the political fallout that we have that had been happening here in the community. These are what I call boilerplate articles of incorporation. When I saw them, they were exactly the same as the articles of incorporation that the Kiwanis International is having the independent in Kiwanis clubs. I mean, it's almost verbatim. I don't think there's any difference except for the reason for the organization, firefighting and medical coverage. So the articles do include a requirement that in order to change, and this is one of the things that was implemented in the previous article change, that it takes a two-third vote of the membership at a meeting like this or a meeting called especially for that purpose in order to make changes in the future. So in order for us to make changes, it has to be acceptable to a large majority of our membership. And that continues in these articles. So if you've read them, or if you have any questions about this, we can ask, you know, we can answer them now. But basically these are as simple as you can get. They are what the IRS requires per Whittington, with the requirement that any action taken to amend the articles, amend the bylaws, or dissolve the corporation will require a two-thirds vote of the membership. So, do you have any questions? Joyce? We're bringing a microphone. Joyce, and identify yourselves when you speak so we'll know who you are.
I'm Joyce Hyman. Is that on?
I'm not.
Anyway, I'd like to know what defines the membership and if the two-thirds vote is the members in attendance at the meeting, or whether it's the actual two-thirds vote of the total membership. But that's a monitor's copy.
Okay, that's right. And the issue is addressed in the bylaws about whether it's the two-thirds of the actual membership or potential membership. And this is a question that that Tim has often asked about your definition of the membership. You're eligible for membership if you live within our three-mile area in the extended areas. But the vote is those present at the meeting.
You just said it would be two-thirds of the members at the meeting?
Yes.
Chair says by a two-thirds vote of all of the members of the corporation. So that if we have a 600 membership, we need 400 votes. It would not be two-thirds of this group.
That's what needs to be addressed.
What article are you in there?
Article 10, voluntary dissolution.
There we go.
Okay, in Article 9 it says members at the annual meeting and or at any special meeting, that's in Article 9.
Right, it's two different votes.
Two different votes.
That's a
okay.
Dissolution.
All right. You want to make a motion that says at any,
so the members present at any meeting?
Sure. So I think we can entertain a motion for that.
Now, for dissolution, maybe we do need the other.
Okay. All right.
But
that's
for changing the bylaws.
Changing bylaws and articles.
The articles.
Okay. All right. All right. Does that answer that question? Does that answer that question? The answer is you're not going to make any changes. It's going to take. Yeah, I see him.
So for us, the issue should be what the current articles say we need to vote to change the current
articles. Okay. He said that the vote is controlled by the bylaws.
The current articles
to drive the vote today. Right, but that's still two-thirds. What she's asking about the last paragraph is dissolution to dissolve the corporation. Should it require two-thirds of the membership vote at a meeting or two-thirds of the membership at large?
Right now it says at large.
At large. That's for a dissolution. Change amendments and bylaws. It's still two-thirds at the meeting.
Is that at this meeting, the annual meeting,
yeah.
Or at a specified meeting?
Either or. The bylaws allow for a special meeting to be called for the purpose of voting on the articles and bylaws. But the issue of dissolving the corporation, the way it stands now, four members of this board could vote to dissolve this corporation, and it would be done. That's by state law. Agree? Not with the current articles. No. Not with the current articles. But that's the way it was in the past, before we changed it. You have to dissolve the corporations, is what that issue was.
The dissolution as really the default state statute allows for a majority board vote on the board for voluntary dissolution. The default state statute.
Okay. But if the articles of incorporation state otherwise, it overrides it.
That's correct. Okay. Tim?
Yeah, I've heard that one of the reasons we're looking to change the articles was that there was a issue with the definition of the requirements for 501c3. Is that actually true? So our current articles have a English?
Well, I'm going to refer that to Bill.
Yeah, the current articles that got amended 2-3 years ago didn't have that language for 501c3. It doesn't really work, but I threw it in the bylaws just as the IRS something. So yes, at some point, we really need to put that 501c3 stuff into the articles of incorporation. Whether this is the set of articles you want to do, or and the old one, I don't know, but we do need to put 501c3 stuff in.
Is there a cost to amending the articles? I mean, shouldn't we be doing this at the same time, knowing that we need to do it?
There is a fee. We have to publish these articles, and there is a publication fee for the articles, to change the articles, but not the bylaws. This is just to change the articles so that they comply with IRS requirements.
But you're saying that 501c3 not saying it right now does not comply?
Those are the articles that were approved.
Not in the ones we have right now.
The current articles.
Okay.
It's in these, but it's not in the ones that we're operating under with. Order right now. Okay. That's the end of that.
Okay, go.
I'm not a lawyer and I'm not a professor, but I read two sets of articles, I've amended articles, and I've read two 501c3s that have been approved. And I will tell you, we must be working under compliance of 501c3. Bill says that, you know, it's in the old one, or in the ones we're working under, but not the ones we are now. I believe very strongly that we, by not being in compliance with 501c3 definition, the state of Arizona actually requires all federals to, because they have to have that 501c3 paragraph that satisfies the state on their articles. I just did new ones, I meant to do ones this summer, as well, that is 501c in compliance statement regarding the 501c3. If we are operating as a 501c3 and don't have the resolution required of the 501c3 running throughout, we, in my opinion, nothing probably other than a little bit of experience, jeopardize our existence of our 501c3. We need to be responsible and aware of what we need to comply with. And that 501c3 resolution needs to be there. My other question, and my long-time existing question, as a member, court member, nonprofit corporation within the state of Arizona, Arizona Revised Statutes, and I know someone's going to get an argument with me, but I can go find them, require that if you're a member organization, you must be able to produce a membership list. And that is by which the voting would take place. You cannot just arbitrarily say whoever shows up, whoever owns the property right now, and whoever is this now. We have certain compliances that are required, and I just ask anyone that isn't sure of that to go to the Arizona Revised Statute, Street Nonprofit, Arizona Corporation, membership, and the IRS 501c3.
Okay. Anybody else? All right.
No, me too.
All right. If I'm going to try this, if somebody will make a motion to accept these articles as incorporations, let's see if we can do this by voice vote.
It's on the ballot.
It's on the ballot, but even
it's
still,
on the ballot.
Okay. You want it on the ballot?
Yeah.
It's already on.
Okay, that's fine. You have a question? All right. All right. Anything else about the articles of incorporation? Other change. Okay. Chuck. Lucky.
Okay. Come on. All right, so we've got a presentation of the candidates, which is my job to do. And we've got three spots and opening. Vic is coming up. John Onassian is coming up. And we have Greg Stavis leading the board.
Yeah.
He looks so happy.
That's only temporary.
Younger and taller.
So I'll turn this over to each of the candidates and let them talk, and then we're going to call for nominations from the floor. Do we have any nominations from the floor? Or right off the bat? Any nominations from the floor? Yes.
I move nominations to the floor.
Yeah, I have to say this three times, so are there any nominations from the floor?
Each time louder.
Because I can nominate Greg Sava again. I'm happy to do that. Okay, so we've got a motion for closing the nominations.
I'll second.
Okay. Then we've got some words from our... Do we want all in favor of closing?
Yes,
sir. All right, we have all in favor.
Aye.
All right. Any discussion?
Too late.
We're going to go to Vic. He's off.
Does he even have to speak? There's three candidates.
He's got to speak.
All right. I like it. Make it
great.
You can say anything you want. You're getting real.
I am going to say everything I want.
Just let it happen.
The treasurer, anybody who votes for me, gets a $10 check from the treasurer.
Or he'll keep talking.
You think? Well, given the fact that there's three positions and there's three people running, this could be a real short speech. I've been on the board for 2 years. I'm the treasurer. I think a lot of you guys know the work I do with the Red Cross. Last assignment was the operations director for Sandy in New Jersey, where I had a good 4,000 volunteers there. So I think I know a lot about volunteers. And guess what? They're no different in the Red Cross than they are in the Walker Fire Department. They're all very dedicated. They're all very caring, and they're all incredibly opinionated. But, you know, it's a healthy thing. You know, that's enough said about me. I think, really, one thing I would like to squelch that I've heard many times in the neighborhood is that if a fire gets started, there's really nothing a fire department can do, so why bother? This past week, the Green Gate fire was less than half a mile from my house. Christy was kind enough to wake us up in the middle of the night in McFarland. We look out the window, you see a yellow glow up on the hill right opposite us. An hour later, that whole mountaintop was just a huge glow. I thought, that's it. And my wife and I are throwing stuff in a suitcase thinking, yeah, we're out of here. It was incredible how quick, I mean, even two people, Tim and Roger, what two people can do with a little bit of water till the cavalry arrives, because it did take 45 minutes, but within an hour and a half, I would say, you could see that glow going down, down, and down, and so is my blood pressure. So, you know, this is more of a plea not to vote for me, because frankly, this is not going to help my resume any going forward. But do know that if I do this again, you know, I'm going to start breaking arms and kneecaps for money, because we can't continue to operate with a small percentage of people giving. And I'm looking out at the audience that actually gives. So this is not the appropriate audience to say this to, but, you know, we do have to make a much better, I'm trying to say this nicely, attempt to reach people and convince them they need to give, because I'm here to tell you, after watching how fast they put that fire down, you know, it is very possible to put it down. You know, I actually hiked up there yesterday just walking up that driveway. You know, and I think I'm in pretty good shape. I mean, it was a hell of a walk. And then to see, I'm not exaggerating, this fire was fought on probably a 45% grade. I mean, it was straight up and down. So you talk about commitment. I mean, if I ran up that hill twice with a hose, they would have been taking me down in the Walker Rescue. So I guess really what I wanted to say thank you, since I was the first house, you know, that the fire would reach, you know, I'm helping my auntie for the donations too, Chuck. And frankly, to you sitting out there already given, this $250 a year that we've asked for every year, it's been $250 every year for forever. But guess what? Our expenses haven't remained stagnant while our request. So if you can, you know, I'm using the bully pulpit here to try to get people to open their checkbooks up again and give. And if you've got friends who are still PO'd about something that happened 3 years and they're not giving because of their feelings were hurt or somebody, you know, said the wrong thing, you know, get over it. Just get over it. Get your checkbook out, because when the fire does start around your house, you know, they're going to come. You know, this is not Texas, where, if you recall the district, the district where somebody didn't pay in, they sat there, if you recall on the news, the fire trucks have sat there and watched the house burn down because they hadn't paid their fee. You know, that ain't going to happen here. But, you know, part of me almost thinks it's a shame that we can't. Sorry for getting the bully pulpit. But, you know, this is, you know, everybody was very strong that didn't want a district, which would force everybody to pay an equal share. I'm just telling you, as the treasurer right now, we cannot continue the way we are because our expenses are definitely going up, and they need to go up due to the sophistication of the fire department and the stuff that they need to run. So I'm not mincing any words here. In a few more years, we're going to be in deep, deep trouble at our current way of doing business. So, giving you all that good news, vote for me.
Wait, rarely do you have a candidate bash voters. Rarely. It's an interesting technique, you know. Wow.
The world's dying for this job.
Yeah. Well, I'm John O'Hennessy, and I've been on board for 4 years, and apparently I have not had enough, so I'm willing to continue. Easy enough just to ask the questions. I mean, it's going to be an easy vote today, so. Question?
Yeah.
All right. You know, I guess I'll just say that my goals, you know, we haven't really talked much about goals, but, you know, we would like to see a substation in the Potato Patch area. That would be a really big improvement for this community. Firewise education through, did I say Potato Patch?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Let's try it. That's right. Okay. Potato Patch area, that would be a big shot in the arm for this community. Firewise education through Lauren. Letting people know, if it's a wind warning day, don't have an outside fire at your house, or in this case, it might have been at somebody else's house. The best way to fight a fire is to keep it from happening, and that was really obvious in the Green Gate fire. We still want to keep an eye on our ISO rating. We've got a really good rating right now, and I think we're really well in compliance, but we're not going to let that slip away. And then, obviously, the last thing we need to do is just continue to support Roger. He's doing a great job. That's it.
This is Ernie Irvin. He's putting his name in for the board, and he's been a long time member of the Walker community, and I'll let him give you all the details.
Okay. What am I talking into here? This one?
Well, you know,
when I heard, my name's Rudy Erdman. We have been been here for over 40 years, somewhere in there. But when Bill called me about an opportunity here, the first thing I thought about, well, what does it pay? and Bill didn't say anything, and I thought, well, okay, well, this sounds just exactly up my alley, so that's great. But after hearing the treasurer's report today, I'm going to weigh the salary. Anyway, seriously, we have been here for a long time. A lot of familiar faces here. We've been up on Blue John Lane for a long time. We've seen a lot of people come and go. I'm going to tell a quick story, not to wax nostalgic, but, you know, we all had the days of the CB radios here before we had all the cell phones and we had all the towers and we had everything else. And I climbed up and put my antenna on the tallest tree on the lot to get Channel 2 in Flagstaff, okay? Well, there's a point to this story, and I'll make it real short. All the stuff that we have out here and all the equipment and the manpower and the materials and all the money that's gone to get this to where we are today came from us. And I care, but this isn't about me. It's about three candidates that want to get on board. and about people that have done an incredible amount of work to get us to where we are. So my reason for wanting to be on the board is, again, I care, we all care, and we want to see this community continue in the way that it has and improve. And that's going to take, again, time and money and dedication and people who want to be here and want to contribute. So that's why I'm doing this. Thank you for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Okay, so we're going to go ahead and everybody have a ballot. Let's fill those out. And while we're doing the voting, we're going to have a
three people that have it.
Three all individuals to get a position on the board and ballot.
Yeah.
And they should have to unanimous vote for it to count it whatever part of the ballot.
However we want to handle that.
Make a motion.
We have proxies that kind of put
And I'm going to do the other mic.
Don't leave because we have other things to talk about here while they count the votes. Okay, all ballots are in the end now.
Yeah. Hey, Chuck.
How long do you want Benny to talk
straight up? I'm going to do a brief thing on Firewise, and I'm going to do some hand stuff, so a brief synopsis. Thank you.
All right, Denny Clark, who is emergency manager in Alpine County, about the March 29th face fire we had in State of Patch, more or less. But before we do that, I just wanted to talk with you briefly about the FireWise efforts that are being made in the community right now. You know, over the last couple of years, we've had some issues where we decided to bring in chippers, and we had people bringing in their slash and trash, and we had all these volunteers lined up to do that. Vic, can you?
Thank you.
We had a lot of volunteers to do this, bring everybody in here, line them up, unload your trailers and chip them and everything. Then the county bought a grinder, and we decided a year ago to use that grinder, and this year we did it again, and it was very successful. It actually eliminated everybody lining up and waiting in line to get their trucks unloaded, to get ground up. This way we didn't bring your stuff in. We spent the whole month of last part of April and the first part of May lining all the wood up and the parking lot out here, and a grinder can do that in a blink of an eye. So here's what happened. We made a decision to do that and do a needle week, which turned into a needle month. And everybody comes up the first part of the year, they want to clean up, rake up, get your property in order. And so we put a dumpster out there for needles only. We filled 5 40-yard dumpsters of needles. Amazing, amazing amount of work by the community to get that stuff raked up and put out, you know. I had an email from one of the people that visited the website, and I don't know if that person is here today. There is a Wyatt. Are the Wyatts here? Wyatt said, my insurance company has threatened to cancel my homeowner's policy on my cabin in Walker due to ground litter. Thanks to your needle dumpster, I was able to haul 42 bags of needles off my property. I'm unsure if there is more that needs to be done. Does the department offer a fire inspection report, and where can I get such a thing? And I think we can do that. So there are, in case you aren't aware of it, State Farm is one of the insurance companies that will be coming up and doing inspections on property to make sure that your home ignition zone is clear, and that's the area around the house. And so one of the things FireWise does is pick up that material. I mean, have you bring it in, and we chop it up and put it away. So thanks to the joint efforts of all the citizens doing that, this year alone, you probably saw 5 huge piles out here in the parking lot of chips. Well, that represented about 400 cubic yards of material that people have picked up, brought in, dumped off, worked hard to do that, and we ground it all up, and you'll be happy to know that we were hauling that stuff off in the past. It was $40 for a 40-yard dumpster. This year, we've employed a septic company.
Ah, there you go.
That was. We employed a septic company who is now coming in and picking up these chips for free, and they're taking that back and they're mixing that with effluent and waste and some bioagents, and they're turning that into a fertilizer which will help things grow. Instead of us littering the landfills with all these chips, we're making a smaller carbon footprint. We're utilizing that, recycling that, to put it back into use in the environment, which I think is a wonderful thing. So not only are we doing that, have done that this year, but we've, thanks to, and I know he doesn't like to get much acknowledgement, but Lauren Biker is the head of this committee, and has spent countless hours putting grants together, writing grants, rewriting grants, and, you know, we owe him a big round of applause. It's just a wonderful thing. I'm on this committee, happy to serve along with Roger and Tim McFarland. And, you know, it's a great thing when you can do that. Now, the money that we bring in isn't the reason for doing all this. The reason for doing all this is to get this stuff off the ground. But we've had one grant that's just about out now,
runs out in at the end of this year, and we got another one we just got awarded, which will run through June of 2014. These are 9 to 10 grants. Future grants, these are for hazard existing home ignition zones. Future grants will be for probably cleaning up some bare land that we can, if we can get our hands on those, and some of the things that we've been doing recently. So it's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of fire fuel removed from the forest, if you will, and a lot of people work very diligently to make that happen. We got a special deal through the county to have them bring the grinder in, and so I would say we usually post this on our website, and for those of you who haven't signed up on our website, Chris Alex has done a great job on putting that website together, and owe him a great hand of, a round of applause, too, because I think he's done, really done a great job, too. So, next on this agenda, I don't think I have anything else to say, good thing. I'd like to bring up the Yavapai County Emergency Manager, Denny Fox, and he's going to talk briefly on the March 29th incident that we had up here that brought, Roger referred to this, brought all these different community agencies together to work together and know the area. Denny?
County Emergency Manager. I'd like to thank Lauren and the Firewise communities for the invitation to be here this morning to speak with you for a few minutes. I've got probably 2 hours worth of stuff that I could present, but what we're going to do is I'm going to hit a few things through my next few minutes, and I have passed out some stuff that you guys can take with you, and you'll be able to read it, and it should hopefully it'll be a benefit to you. First thing, Supervisor Jack Smith was here just a little while ago, and he said, hey, Denny, when you get the opportunity to speak, why don't you mention some of the projects that the county is working on for the Walker community for me? I said, sir, I'll be more than glad to. He says, you know those little white circles they have in the roads down going up and down Walker Road? I said, yes, sir. I was wondering what that was about. And he said, well, Denny, that's where the contractor kind of messed up on the road. And we're kind of holding the money back until they come back out here and fix that the way it's supposed to be done. And so Yavapai County is following through on that. We're going to go ahead and get those holes fixed up that have been identified, and then they're going to go back through and chip and seal the road itself. So we're looking forward to it. Another area that we're looking at is we're concerned about your one-lane bridge down here. You know, that bridge is actually in pretty good shape. The problem is it's a choke point anytime you have to leave in a hurry. And so what they're looking at doing is putting that bridge under a project, and we'll probably be replacing that bridge. Okay. So that's currently in the design phase right now. I was notified by the one of the county engineers, Lauren, and he is going to be in contact with you and also with Chief to help coordinate that. Betsy?
Oh, yeah, could you put the mic
a little closer? Room looks like that? Okay, here we go. Yes, sir.
I don't know if you can answer it if the supervisor's already left, but there are some places along our road that is starting to cave in. I know one just before our road that's getting bad and it's not white circles on it, so I hope.
If you would meet with me as I get ready to leave here, I've got another meeting here in just a little bit. But if you'll get with me and give me that address as to where it's at, I'll notify the Public Works Director. Okay? So that being said, are there any more questions about projects for the Walker community from Public Works and Yavapai County? No. Sir?
One quick question. All the reflectors that they put in?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
All right. No one's put anything about this yet, correct?
No, I haven't.
The open people like the...
scratch it when I called. I was told that they were supposed to be 240 feet apart when I called the county right after they put them in, and they said, we're fixing that. We realize we put them in too close. I haven't seen anything change.
Okay.
I'm wondering if that's something that's in your jurisdiction or not. But
it's not in mine, but I know the guy who does do that, so we'll take care of that.
I mean, not only do they electrify the road, but it's just like a nuisance, you know. It's almost too much to look at.
Does anybody else feel that?
Yeah. Not only is it too much to look at, but it's hard to pull off into the area if you won't let somebody by.
$100, I'll sell you a reflector. Don't pull that myself.
Then you'll donate that money back to the fire department, right? Okay, folks, I handed out. Yes, ma'am. I can hear you.
Okay. No? Yes. From what I understand, the post distances are now what is determined by the county to be proper. We were lucky before because the road was so old, nothing had been done, but now that it has been done, we have to comply with that. But part of the problem is that they are white posts. Can we have the plain old brown one? And look at that. Yeah, I know I've talked to Jack Smith about this at least two or three times, and supposedly the county is going to take out the white and give us at least something a little more blindable.
Okay, as I previously mentioned, just so that way we're clear, okay, I'll take this information back to Byron. Who I work with Byron and talk to him all the time, and I'll take this back to him and let him know Walker Community's concerns and reference this, okay? Yes, sir.
They put up a sign on Morgan Day Road. They put a stop sign up. There is no street sign that says Walker Road on Morgan Day Road.
Okay. Any other questions? Because he's going to take my mic away in a minute. Okay. What I handed out to you is some stuff that's really near and dear to my heart, and I want to talk to you guys about this for just a moment. I want to talk to you about family and personal preparedness. When you really get down to it, disaster is very local. And when disaster strikes a community, a lot of times folks are unprepared to be able to take care of themselves and be able to take care of their their neighbors. Now, what we've passed out there is a slide presentation that I was wanting to speak about for a little bit. That I'm going to let you guys just go ahead and go through that and read it. Okay? There's some things in here that are very important. One of the things is Code Red. Code Red is a website you can go to, put your cell phone number in it, and any time that there's a fire, an evacuation that's been ordered, or something similar to that, that affects your neighborhood, affects your community, they will do an automatic dial out, and you will get a message on your phone, both a text message and a voice message. I highly recommend that you go to Code Red on the Sheriff's Office website and sign up for that. The reason why is because the people that are responsible for the evacuations, they're very, very efficient. It's the Yavapai County Jeep Posse. They work directly for the Sheriff's Office, but you never know. In the middle of the night, dense smoke, they may not see your house sitting off the road a little ways. Okay? This here enables a way for you to be able to get a text message, a phone call, these types of things. It will advise you of a evacuation. Another thing, personal preparedness. In my home, and I'll use myself as an example. In my home, I got a blue box and a brown box. My brown box has my deeds, my insurance papers, my property papers, everything that I need to know about my personal property and should something happen. And in my other box, I have my personal identification. I have my passport, my birth certificates, these types of documents. I also have a list of all medications that I take and my wife takes. So that way, if we have to leave in a quickness, we can grab those two boxes along with a day pack. We have 72 hours worth of clothes and stuff like that in there. And there's a list in that packet I gave you of the types of things that are very, very beneficial. That list is actually produced by the American Red Cross. So, yeah, we stowed it. It's not plagiarized. It's not emergency management. So it's a great list. We looked at it, and we said, you know what? That is a great idea. And I would challenge you and ask you to get prepared. Make sure you know where your documents are, where you can grab them in a moment's notice. Grab your medication. Mama, my wife, I call her Mama because she raised three very ornery kids. They're great kids, but they're a little on the ornery side. They take after their mother. I don't know. But anyway, we keep our medication close. So that way we got a little box that we put it all in, and we can get up and get out of our house in 5 minutes or less. So in my day pack, I have about 3 days' worth of clothes. They're not my nice and pretty clothes. They're my runner. It's this type of stuff, okay? That I can throw in there with enough underwear and stuff. I already have that already taken care of, and I am ready to go in a moment's notice. And the reason why I tell you this is over the last few weeks, we have had a few fire starts in this community. And I'm not saying that as an alarmist. I'm just saying that we do live in a hazardous environment, and it's incumbent upon us to be prepared. And a part of that preparedness is what we did on March 29th, which was have one of the largest preparedness exercises for the basin, for the Prescott Basin. And let me share with you a little bit about the backdrop of this exercise. This exercise, the planning for this exercise, started back in November, and your chief was a part of that exercise planning committee that said, you know what we need to do? We need to be able to bring units and agencies together from all levels of government, from the federal government, the state government, and local response agencies, together to be able to practice how we would actually operate if we were to have a disaster, a fire, or something similar to that. And then we said, well, where's a good close place that we need to practice at? And the idea came up, well, let's practice in the Walker community. Let's practice in the Walker community. So that way we all know how to work with one another. Lead agency on that for the Walker community was your fire department. They held here at this location the actual evolutions, which are the exercises that firefighters need to be able to practice to lay hose, draft water, do these types of things. And so we brought in Prescott Fire, Central Yavapai Fire, Chino Fire. We also brought in many of the smaller departments in and around Central Yavapai. In addition to that, we also had units come over from the Verde Valley to practice that mutual aid component that is so very important to our ability to respond. In doing so, there was a large level of communication, a large level of coordination that had to be done at all levels. As the Prescott Fire Groups moved into this area to actually practice the evolutions of putting out a fire, the units from the Verde Valley came in and backfilled those units to run regular calls. Sedona Fire actually landed a life flight helicopter and transported a patient during that period of time. So it was very, very successful in that form. As part of that, we have a local Type 3 all-hazards incident management team led by Todd Bentley. Who here knows Todd Bentley of Groom Creek Fire? Awesome gentleman, awesome team. They were able to practice their team and actually get their team out, start working through the wildland components and figure out what they need to do. They're a brand new team, just stood up in January, and they were able to get some very, very valuable practice. In addition to that, we said, you know what? The Yavapai County Emergency Operations Center would be open in support of the people of Walker. So we activated the Emergency Operations Center over in the city of Prescott. We moved our operation from our EOC over to the Prescott EOC and then practice operations in support of the people of Walker. As part of that, the American Red Cross came in. They set up a shelter and practice sheltered operations, as well as the animal disaster services. One of the things that often gets left behind is the pets. You let them out that morning and you can't find them. You're calling and calling and calling and they don't come. Or you might get into a little bit of a hurry and want to leave and what am I going to do with my dog? I ask you to take your dog with you. We have them taken care of. Anybody here have horses? Anybody here have cattle? Okay, good. But we do have the ability to take care of them as well. Okay, so Animal Disaster Services opened up in conjunction with the American Red Cross, which is the operation plan for Yavapai County. We always co-locate and co-open those two organizations together. In support of that entire operation, who here is on the CERT team? Thank you. Thank you for coming out. Thank you for helping the IMT set up, for those of you that were able to do that, helping the American Red Cross set up their shelter and helping Animal Disaster Services. This is the first time that a CERT team in Yavapai County has been asked to assist in these types of things. And that's not the last time. That is going to be the standard as opposed to the exception. Okay? So that's how we're going to be doing business from here on out. I would ask you to be, if you're not participating in things such as CERT or things like that, those are very, very important programs. One, it really helps you to be personally prepared. It helps your family be prepared, and it helps you start thinking in the mindset of preparedness. And when you see something as a CERT member, such as a neighbor who may not be able to self-evacuate, you'll know what to do as a CERT member. Okay? So these are very, very important considerations. It's a very valuable tool for the community. And now that I have shared with you a little bit about our exercise, I've shared a little bit with you also about personal preparedness. I've shared a little bit about our community preparedness in that exercise on March 29th. I'd like to ask you, is there any questions about any of these things that we've done? Betsy?
I don't have a question, but I have a great big thank you, Jim, for all of you. It's encouraging all of us to be responsible for ourselves, our neighbors, and our students. And you're making a big difference.
Well, thank you, Betsy. Dr. Condon. One thing I would ask you, if you get that knock on the door, you've done what I've asked you, and you've gone to the Red Alert page, and you signed up, and you know what? You're doing your part. In the middle of the night, you have to evacuate your house. I know that it would be very difficult because a lot of times in situations like that, we don't know in the morning and when we come back if our house will be there or not. I know how it is, and it's my desire that we never lose a house in Yavapai County to a wildfire. It's my desire that we never lose a person due to wildfire. And we do everything we can. And we work very hard to get the word out, to be a part of the communities, to be able to help in doing the planning necessary to be able to protect our population. We really do. Hugh and I are very, very busy doing this on a regular basis. But if you're leaving your home and you have to leave, please stop by the Red Cross shelter. I'm not saying you have to stay there. And you may have, and part of your personal planning may be, I'm going to my sister's house down in the valley. I'm going to my son's house in Scottsdale. Or I'm going to California for a couple weeks. Or I'm going to Wisconsin. Or wherever you decide to go, please do us a favor. Because we're going to be looking for you. Okay? Stop by the American Red Cross and ask them to put your name on that list that they have that's put on the website. Yes, ma'am.
I have to correct that.
Yes, ma'am.
That was some old wording. The American Red Cross does not want you to stop by the shelter. It's not the same. When we do a shelter registry, we can't share it with the authorities anyway. We only register people who are staying at the shelter. Now, people are welcome to come to the shelter, shower, get a meal, attend a public meeting, get other information. What the Red Cross wants you to do is to go to the Safe and Well website at www.redcross.org/safeandwell and register yourself at Safe and Well so your loved ones outside the affected area can first and know that you're safe and well. Or text message them, call them, future outside of the area contact person. But
the Safe and Well is exactly what I was speaking of.
Right. And you can come to the shelter
shelter and register on the Safe and Well website. You're welcome to come to the shelter, but what we have happened in the in other evacuations shelters is that people come in and say, we were told by the authorities to come register, and you know, we can't register them and share that. It's all about confidence.
I fully understand. The Safe and Well, and I'm going to tell you why I believe in the Safe and Well website, okay? And you can do it off your smartphone, okay? You can do it on your Android, your iPhone, or whatever. But the Safe and Well website, the word registry was probably the wrong choice of words. But the Safe and Well website, what it does is it provides information to your family members, to those that love you, to those that are going to be calling the Emergency Operations Center and the Sheriff's Office asking about you. And when we get a call, we have to act upon it. And it may not be the safest thing for us to do. So I'm asking you if you would sign up on the Safe and Well website. You can, I believe that link is on the American Red Cross webpage. You can go to Safe and Well. Just put your information. I'm over at Judy's house. Give me a call. And that way your family members can look you up and be able to know exactly where you're at. So those are the two things. Are there any questions?
I have one. It's sort of related. Green Gate fire.
Yes, sir.
Happened at midnight, and nobody knew about it. We just found out about it until 8 o'clock this morning. Okay, we live, we're not a charcoal kiln, wherever half mile was profiled, up there by Mesa Road. The days have been extremely windy. That night the wind died down. I think that's going in the city of Baker. The thing is, and when I called Sheriff's Dispatch the next day to find out why there was no red coat notification, they said that was the call of the incident commander on scene. And they don't notify anybody, even an alert, unless the incident commander deems it necessary. And the incident commander said the community of Walker was never in danger. Well, the community of Walker stands in a 3 mile radius. It would be nice to know, just an alert, hey, we have a fire, be aware. You don't need to evacuate, but we have a fire. If it's at midnight, you're not going to know until all of a sudden, hopefully, you wake up and smell smoke.
Yes, sir.
But that was very frightening. There are several families who live up there the whole night.
Yes, sir. In order for an evacuation to occur, this is the process. The actual process is lined out in that packet that I just handed out to you. But what happens is the incident commander of that incident, if it's a type 4 or whatever type of incident response it is, they make a call as to whether or not the homes or structures are in danger. The first thing I ask anytime I get notification is, what are the values at risk? And what is the relationship of the values to the fire? Okay? That's one of the first things I do. By that morning, what I was told was that line had already been encompassed around that fire. Is that correct? They got on that pretty quick. And they laid that hose line around that. And they felt very confident, based upon the location of where that fire was at, that they were going to be able to attack it appropriately. They didn't feel like it was going to be a runaway situation. And they didn't feel like those homes were actually at risk. The one home that it did burn by, it burned around. And that's probably because that home was fire-wise, more than likely. Okay.
Can I just say one thing, Terry? When we bought, Sharon and I bought a scanner, because we want to know what's going on. So as soon as that call comes out, we are aware of what's going on. If you also have the time that they switch over to the technical channel or something like that, you usually have all the information. And you have a pretty good idea whether or not this is going to be something you need to get out or you don't.
Now,
I would definitely encourage you.
Once that commander, incident commander, makes that determination, he calls the sheriff's office and orders the evacuation. The sheriff then starts an evacuation order. Okay, the Jeep posse is called in. The Jeep posse then starts clearing out homes closest to the fire and works their way out. Okay? Yes, sir.
It would be nice just to have a notification that a fire is there. We're all adults in here, and some of us have medical conditions that even if the evacuation is not ordered, it may be chosen that we just pick up, take a dog, and go away for a while. All I'm saying is just a heads up. And scanner, is the scanner just for fire department frequencies, or do we get all the police and sheriff's departments too?
You can get whatever you want on it.
Yep. Okay, and where we pick them up?
We'll take a look at that process that goes through. We go through, and then I'll take a look at evaluating that. What we do when we do our planning is I get the chiefs together, and then we all take a look at the plans as to how we are going to implement them. And then from that point forward, then I either add that into the plan, change the plan, or whatever. But I appreciate that, and I'm going to take a look at it. Okay.
Could I just say one more thing? You are familiar with Joe Hewlett?
Yes.
Doesn't he control the signage in the county?
He does.
Okay. So I've had questions from people that come up here and they say, well, we have fire restrictions or do we have no campfires? We have this sign right down there by the cattle guard, and everybody goes, well, where is that at? You know, you drive by that sign now. Probably everybody here has driven by that sign a million times, and it never moves. I mean, this becomes part of the background. So I was wondering if we could get other signs here, because part of the fire situation is just like what happened there. Who knows if that was a campfire or a hunter or something. We need to make sure that people see that.
Yeah. Part of our warning and notification system is not only the signage, and you got to remember that these signs, they cost a lot of money, okay? And then the area that it takes to actually put these signs in place, we can take a look. One of the things that I've been looking at is, you know those ice on the road signs?
Yeah.
We've been looking at kind of modifying them so that way we could flip it up and it says fire ban. We've been looking at doing that. If we can get some of those made, we might be able to get some money to be able to actually get those set in on the entrances of the communities. So that way folks can see exactly what that is. But I also communicate with the papers. I communicate with radio. I hate communicating with radio because you got like a one shot. You can't say, oh, let me go back and restate that or let me clarify that. So it's kind of an awkward thing, and I'm not much for public speaking. But from the standpoint of signage, we'll see what we can do. I'll talk to Joe and see if I can get some of this stuff done for the communities as a whole. Okay?
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Announcement. Betsy, did you have an announcement? Yes. Come over to the mic. Come up here. Thank you. This summer, like last summer, the community has free sets. The first weekend of every month, we have an ice cream social. And this year, the first one will be at our house, the second one at the Bikerk House. That is the first weekend, first Saturday in July. The second one will be here at the fire station of Ice Creek Social. And that's the first week of August, weekend Saturday in August. And the third one will be at the Eau Claire, is my right there? Eau Claire? That's up in our hotel. The reason I tell you, there's no cost in common attend, but we do have a bucket out, and everything that we collect this year goes to the fire team to help our paramedics with any needs that they have, which will in therefore help the fire department. It'll be a specific need of helping the paramedics of Walker. July 13th, we are having the WCAA, which is in effect our Walker community as well. We are having a dinner dance at the Stone Ridge Golf Club. All benefits for this dinner dance go to the Prescott Vet Center. The Vet Center helps at no charge combat vets of all the theaters, the different wards, ongoing, and their families. And we this year our main project is to help our veterans. And in doing so, we want to honor all Walker and Decatur taxpayers with a wall of honor. So we are looking for all veterans, men and women, of Walker Decatur Tax to give us a photo, their rank, their service that they were in, and the date of service so that we can honor your service. That's very important to us, and we're looking forward to honoring all of you who have served our country in this event. And primarily, that is it.
Thanks, Betsy. Timmy, do you want to say something about your art show?
I forgot. I'm not forgetting.
Oh, sure. I got
it. If you notice, Florida, I think we have a poster hanging also with sheets that you can take on August 10th. We're doing art. We're calling it the art market, where all the proceeds from renting the booth would go to the fire department. However, you can sell whatever you'd like to sell as part of your antique, your crafts, your art, vintage goods, something like that. And so far we have 12 vendors signed up, and we'll be out here in this craft area, and then the fire department will be cooking food that will be sold, and all that money will go to the fire department. So if anybody's interested in your vendor or interested in contributing, it's August 10th.
Thank you, Timmy. Thank you, Timmy. Anybody else? Other announcement, Roger?
One thing just to point out, as I ever discovered, you're not getting a scanner, but keep in mind for our fire department, most of our calls are medical. So, and that comes in the middle of the night. So the odds of you responding can scrape you off the ceiling when the radio goes out. Because someone has a stuck toe. Fair warning, not that you shouldn't have one, but that is the expectation I would set.
My goal is to raise 10% of our annual budget through Walker Days. Right,
Last year we did about probably 5% of it, but we should be able to get up to about 10,000 or 12,000 a year on a good Walker day. So that's what we're shooting for. I mean, we need funding, and what a better way to do it than to have a great event like that. Walker Day is the 22nd of June, which is about, I think it's exactly 4 weeks from today. So mark your calendars. Starts off at 9 o'clock with the yard sale, and the actual official Walker Day is 11 a.m. So, and usually it goes till about 2:30, 3 o'clock. Once the band stops playing, I find that's about it. Music stops, everyone goes home. Live music, food and games for the kids, the cakewalk. And, you know, again, the yard sale is awesome. In fact, so far we've done about half of our money from the yard sale, maybe $2,000 or $3,000. So it's cool stuff. Come early and then come back later on. What I need are cakes. Anyone that wants to make a cake, come on up and sign up with me. Let me know you can make a cake or a dozen brownies or something like that. If you have donated items for the yard sale today, you can meet me after this meeting out by the old little fire station. And we'll load stuff into that building. And we've got two people. Gene Lupa is going to help oversee the yard sale. So if you know Gene and you're able to give a hand the day of the event, especially early, like 7 o'clock when everything's getting priced and set up, that's a really time that's really labor intensive. So see if you can give her a call and help her out. And kids games, if you'd like to help out with the kids games, we'd love to have you. After the event's over, about 3 o'clock, there's about an hour of cleanup. And if you know you can be in the area, come on by and give us a hand, okay? Hope to see you all there. That's it.
Thank you very much. All right. There's food back there. There's a lot of food, I'm being told. I was waving around in the sand. There's a lot of food back there. So please have lunch. The new board is going to retire. You want the results of the election? We had no write-ins. And the vote for the articles change was 63 yay, 19 no. So that meets the two-thirds requirement, so the articles will be changed. And the new board members are Vic Hinken, re-elected John Onesian, and then Rudy Erdman. Congratulations, Rudy. You just joined. The numbers? The numbers were 83, 70. Okay, Vic got 83, John got 77, Rudy got 75.
By the way, lunch costs $100 a person.
Let's try.
All right, we're going to adjourn the meeting. Anybody move to adjourn?
Thank you.
All right.